Support for The Full Story comes from Long Wharf Theater, creating theater of, for, and by the people of Greater New Haven. Everyone's story has a place at Long Wharf. You belong.
Many of us say we are in favor of it. There's no doubt about that. But come on, let's see a show of hands. Not if you're driving, of course. Let's see a show of hands. How many of us say that we want to support our local merchants? We know how important it is for our community, but then we go and then what do? We shop online or we head over to the mall. Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU. And speaking of online, we broadcast around the globe at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. And look, just the other week we were speaking about the malls in our region. But today we really wanted to look at it from the other perspective, the smaller shops. You know, the ones that have been around sometimes for decades. They've been in families, in some cases, for generations. The ones where you walk in and people say, "Hey, Ron, how are you? Good to see you. Welcome back." The ones who sponsor bake sales, they welcome interns, they give a discount for the teams at the school, they give a kid a first job, they organize a road race. The ones who help to make our communities, communities. Let's talk today about how they are surviving, can they make it, and what they mean to us. Alex Soule is back with us. Alex was here the other week because he covers business and he covers retail for Hearst Connecticut Media, and it's a pleasure to see you again. Thanks for coming back in. So last time we were talking about malls. Let's talk about the smaller shops. How are sales so far?
It looks to me, and we're coming off of obviously a Small Business Saturday right after Black Friday. From what I've seen, the downtown areas seem to be bustling. Obviously, there's a greater preponderance of spending online, and Adobe Analytics tracks that, the 100 largest online retailers, and their numbers were way up this year. Now, Connecticut, about 4 or 5 years ago, had reached a deal with Amazon to get them to start charging sales tax, which had been seen as the great equalizer for smaller local retailers that had to charge retail sales tax.
Only fair.
Exactly. And Amazon had not been able to. Amazon went right ahead and cooperated with that as they did in other states. Last year, Connecticut expanded that. So the Connecticut Department of Revenue Services went ahead and implemented new rules that I forget what the exact number was, but it was about the 600 retailers that met a certain threshold for sales in Connecticut and overall revenue had to start charging sales tax at all. So that was the other shoe dropping as a great equalizer. The question is, will it make a difference? Out in the malls on Black Friday, the sense I was getting from people is that they're still pretty much 50-50 in terms of how they're doing their holiday spending this year. Holiday spending is a very different animal, of course, from day-to-day spending in our communities where we might run out to a hardware store and grab something, anything along those lines. So I think the jury's still out. I didn't get a sense that there's been a tremendous change from the last year or two, but it's a very different world today than 10 or 15 years ago, obviously.
I thought you brought up an excellent point in our last show, and that's somewhat why we're doing this show today, because you said, look, so many of us say that we support these local shops. We want to support them because they help us in so many ways. It's so comforting and gratifying to know that they are there when we need them. And they help, as I said before, make our community a community. But how many of us nowadays are sitting back and saying, it's lousy weather out. Do I really want to get in the car and go downtown and buy something? Or am I just going to fire up the laptop or the PC or the phone and I'm going to go to Amazon and I'm going to shop there? What's your feel nowadays for that?
And the feel I've gotten from, I guess, the last 5 to 6 years here in Fairfield County, it's a little bit different from other population centers in the country, whether you're talking about the Virginia peninsulas or Rochester, New York, where you've got large retail centers that are drive-in that people go to in their cars. The predominance of development in Fairfield County these days has been for mixed-use developments. So the apartments up above and the retail areas and the restaurants on the ground level, you know, a urbanization following the New York City model, Manhattan model. And a lot of those developments have done well. If you look in Norwalk, you look in Stamford, a couple other areas. The most recent big one we had built was Bedford Square in downtown Westport, which has been highly successful. Had less of a residential component, but it's in among the downtown areas where a lot of people can walk into there. So it's that mixed use kind of thing that's been developing here in Fairfield County. We've seen a lot of that development there. We've seen those rents, or those landlords getting good rents for those. We have seen some turnover as well, particularly in the Stamford developments, where you've seen a couple of retailers come and go out of those new developments.
Alex Sull is with us. He covers business retail for Hearst Connecticut Media. Joining us now for a few minutes is Andy Markowski, who's the state director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses in Connecticut. Andy, nice to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Ron. Appreciate
Happy holidays to you.
Absolutely. Same to you and the listeners and to Alex.
Thank you. Are you concerned about the atmosphere nowadays?
Yeah. And, you know, NFIB's concern reflects that of what we hear from our members. And our members here in Connecticut, as well as across the nation, are exclusively small business owners. That's who NFIB represents. You know, our average member has 15 or fewer employees, and they're scattered across every, you know, industry and sector, including professional services, agriculture, manufacturing. But we have a very large percentage of our membership in retail as well. About 20% of NFIB members are in the traditional, you know, quote unquote, Main Street retail sector. And they're concerned. And I think their concern reflects kind of a broader concern about the economy in Connecticut in general, at least as compared to other states in the region and the national economy. And that is, you know, boiled down to it's tough being in business and it's tough being a small business. And it's not just the competition from big box stores or competition online. It's also sometimes government policies that can hamper small business growth and development.
Well, give me a few of those policies. What is it that bothers them?
Sure. So I think right now, kind of on a global scale, one of the most important matters to small business owners is the ability to find qualified labor to fill open positions. And this is something you hear about, particularly in Connecticut, workforce development. You know, beyond that, I think what we really have here in Connecticut is an environment that's tough for all businesses, but particularly for some of those in the Main Street sector, restaurants and retailers. And that is, you know, government mandated wage increases, tax increases, and labor mandates. And, you know, just to give a couple specific examples, as these business owners are trying to figure out how to make their payroll for the next month or the next quarter, they have to keep their eyes on what's happening in Hartford and do those policies change what they have to do? Things like a mandated $15 an hour minimum wage, for example, or mandated paid sick leave benefits or paid family medical leave program to be enacted at the state level. These are all things that impact small businesses and their employees more acutely than many other businesses.
Andy, can businesses even get, and specifically now, get younger people to work certain jobs? And I'm just going to give two quick examples. In my area, there's an ice cream shop that I like to go to. And the owner and I have talked, and he's told me that it's impossible to get teens to come work behind the counter. And he has to go and bring in teens from towns away. And then when I was at the Stamford Town Center, probably about a year or two ago, it was around the holidays, and I was speaking to some of the kids that I know there, and they were having a blast because they would go to work at one shop. Owners from another shop would come over, find them, say, if you come work at my place, I will, you know, give you 50% more. I'm just throwing out a number. Come on over, leave where you are now and come to my place. Is there a problem getting people to work certain types of jobs? And is that one of the issues we're facing?
Yeah, I think it is. And I hear that from employers from time to time. And, you know, sometimes it's a dual scenario. It's not just that the employer can't it's not just that the potential employee, you know, doesn't want to go and work in a particular industry or particular segment, but sometimes the employer just can't find the right person who has, let alone the skill set, but sometimes the, you know, the work ethic and even the quote unquote soft skills that you often hear about, you know, customer service skills, showing up to work on time. And, you know, I don't know if there's research or data, the reasons behind it. I just know it's something that NFIB members struggle with when they're looking to find new employees. And I will say, again, in the retail and in the restaurant sectors in particular, one of the concerns that NFIB has, and I think there's, you know, some economic data out there that supports this, is when the government artificially increases minimum wages, it actually prices those entry-level employees out of the labor market. And so on the one hand, you know, I have heard the stories, as you related, where employers are looking to poach good employees from elsewhere. But on the other hand, I've also heard anecdotally, you know, high school students and college students who are actually having a hard time getting that first or that second job. And that's partially because the wage scale has sort of priced out some of those entry level positions, and small business owners are looking to cut back and do more with less.
Andy Markowski, State Director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses in Connecticut. Andy, it was a short conversation today. After the holidays, could we get you back or maybe even into the studio and we'll have a nice long chat with you?
Absolutely. I'd appreciate that, Ron. And thanks to you and Alex and your listeners for having me on today.
Thanks so much, Andy. I appreciate your time today. Alex Soule is with us. He's business and retail reporter for Hearst Connecticut Media, and we're going to bring in our other guests in a minute. Alex, we've heard this for years about how small businesses are worried. And you know, when the internet first started, they were saying, how are we going to survive? What are some of the most unusual ways that you've seen small businesses counteract what's happening? What are they doing that's really driving people to their stores?
And I'm not sure if it's unusual or if it's something which has just been successful in the past, but some of them are being a little bit more unusual in how they go about it. Experiential types of experiences to link with what they're selling, with what people want to do. And so there's any number of examples out there. The one I've always been very impressed by is a triathlete shop in Norwalk, which does a lot of running and walking and biking types of scheduled activities for people who shop there. And they are very successful with that. And as you said at the top of the program, they sponsor a lot of stuff as well, but they're organizing. And so there's a little shop in Greenwich called Splurge, which will do a lot of giveaways that customers can participate in. And so I think there's a lot of shops out there that probably have always been doing this kind of thing. Maybe they're promoting it a little bit better. Maybe now they've got social media, an army of people on social media behind them that they can marshal toward these kinds of things and raise their visibility. And there's a more than a ripple effect, there's a splash effect as far as getting more attention out of that. But they're up against Amazon.com's Prime, you know, Amazon Prime Day, and so you're never going to make a bigger splash than that. And so they're using as many tools as they can. They're trying to get people into the stores, not just to purchase, but to participate. And again, it's something that I think a lot of them are just tweaking as time goes along and trying to find formulas that works.
Well, one of our guests on our last program said exactly that. They said, look, you simply have to evolve with the times. And if you do things the way that you did 20 years ago, you're simply not going to make it. Mayor of Patchogue Village is with us, Paul Pontieri Jr. Paul, how are you, Mayor?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for coming on. Jesse Warren is also joining us, the mayor of Southampton Village. Mayor Warren, how are you?
I am great. It's great to see Paul on the air also.
It's great to have both of you on the air. Mayor Pontieri, I just would like to start with you. Describe for us the situation, what you have in Patchogue Village. How are the smaller retailers doing?
You know, we have some specialty ones that have opened up that are doing very well, but we also have some like Blum's, which is a woman's shop. They sell cruise wear, and they're 80 years of survival on Main Street because they change with the times. They upgrade with the times. They're one of the largest sellers of women's bathing suits in this region. They're tremendous. We have a clothing store, the Colony Shop. The kids, they've been here 75 years. Again, they change with the times. They really focus on things like christening outfits and First Communion outfits, those kinds of things that people want to feel and want to put their hands on. So I think the comment of being able to change with the times that you was mentioned earlier is really, really an important one. The other thing that I find a lot of our smaller businesses are looking at is, you know, we have a theater and we have art space and we have this arts and entertainment, that they're starting to incorporate some of those things that the arts groups have. I went to a cheese shop the other day, and they were doing an opening for someone on a photographic gallery. So how do you marry yourself to the other businesses that are being successful? Because the other part of my problem, which is a good problem, is the number of restaurants that we have now. Far outnumber the small businesses, but the small businesses that we have, I think, are figuring out ways to survive within that environment.
Yeah, all the businesses have to be into it together. Mayor Warren, how's your Main Street, your downtown? What does it look like for those who haven't been there?
That's a great question, and I happen to have a unique lens here because I'm not only the newly elected mayor of Southampton, but I'm also a small business owner. And when I was elected, one of the things I discussed is we need a vibrant downtown. Our Main Street is likely not faring as well as Patrick's. We have some vacancies, and we are trying to work to make sure that we have a vibrant village center. And one of the things that we need to accomplish that Patrick has that we don't is that we don't have a sewer system, which is, for me, a top priority. Because right now, the Suffolk County Department of Health said that we can have no additional restaurant openings. That would also include theaters and whatnot. So for me, vibrancy and experiences, like your guest just spoke about, depend on wet use. So for us, we're seeing a downturn in our downtown, but we can quickly reverse that by bringing in a sewer system and by doing things such as adjusting our master plan to increase walkability, to increase green space. I'm interested in putting in a green trail program, biking lanes, things like that. So we have a lot of work to do, but we can do it.
It sounds very ambitious, but at the same time, is part of your problem the fact that, look, it's off season now, and it is Southampton.
You know, we do have seasonality, but we have plenty of residents who would happily come to our downtown. We have tons of visitors. So we're always going to have four really strong months, but that doesn't mean we can't have eight really other good ones. So I don't subscribe to the fact that we're a seasonal destination and therefore we're only busy 4 months out of the year.
Mayor Pontieri, how do you convince locals to stay local, to shop and to stay downtown and not to travel elsewhere, not to go to the mall, not to go to the big box stores? Do you have to convince them, or is this part of the town pride?
I think we're starting to see a lot more of the local. One of the issues that has been worked out very well for us is we're turning into a younger community. The average age in Suffolk County is about 42 years old. We're at about 35, 36 years old now. So there's a lot less of gray-haired guys like me floating around. And those young families, I see them walking uptown. You see more carriages on Main Street. You see that they want to be part of a community of families. And I think also the fact that we've built 600 residential units that can walk to the downtown. New Village on the Four Corners is 291 units on its own. You're an elevator ride to these shops. And I think, and New Village, when they built that, they built in 40,000 square feet of new retail in small shops, and you have dress shops, and you have those kinds of things. So I think the fact that we've become more of a walkable community, South Patchogue, and when you go up North Ocean Avenue and into the areas north of Main Street, all sidewalks, the ability to walk into town, I think that's a dynamic that we as communities all have to look at, making ourselves more walkable, making it so people want to come in and that they can go from their home, or they can go from their townhouse, or they can go from their apartment and get what they'd like to get.
Alex, the mayor brings up, I think, a fascinating point, which goes back to what you were talking about a little bit earlier, the fact that when so many towns now, I know you cover Connecticut, when so many towns and cities are building nowadays, they're doing mixed use. And as we know from some of the latest statistics, many of the younger generation don't want the bigger houses anymore. They want to live closer to town. They want to be able to walk. They want the restaurants, the movie theaters nearby. They don't want to spend a lot of time in their cars. So I'm wondering if it's going to reverse, if the trend will reverse in the next few years, where the downtowns and the small retail shops will become even more vibrant as the demographics continues to evolve.
And it's a great demographic case study because the millennials are of the age now where they're coming in and buying houses in droves. And so that's the question. Will they choose what their parents had, which is a house with a little bit of land to run around in a suburban kind of environment, cul-de-sac, what have you? Or will they choose something that is close to downtown they can walk at? You know, the other interesting case study in Connecticut will be tolls. And if that goes through, because what effect will that have on regional shopping centers like a Danbury Fair Mall, which is very dependent on Westchester County shoppers coming over the border? Well, if you put a toll booth up at the border, maybe that cuts into that. Same thing coming from the other direction. And would that encourage people or more people to stay out of their cars for shopping purposes, and rather than going to a Lowe's and going a couple exits up I-95 or the Merritt or what have you, instead just going to a local hardware store?
And it's an excellent question. I don't know if I've even heard anybody discuss that in the toll debate. They've discussed so many different aspects of it, but I haven't heard about that one. That's going to be interesting to see how that evolves. Mayor Warren, how about the demographics for you? Are you finding some of those of the younger generation are sticking closer to the downtown?
Right. Now, in fact, I am part of the millennial generation. I'm one of the first millennials, so this resonates well with me. And for our generation, oftentimes it's about experiences. It's about sharing. That's why many millennials use Airbnb and other apps like that. But from my experience, that is exactly what the trend is showing. So I agree with Mayor Pontieri, and if we can increase our downtown as far as mixed use, getting more people to live closer to town, we prefer to walk, we prefer to share, and that's exactly what we need. Now, unfortunately, we have a contrasting situation versus Patchogue, where many of our year-round residents are leaving, and many of our millennials are leaving, and we want to do whatever we can to bring families back to Southampton and bring millennials and seniors alike back to Southampton as well.
Mayor Pontieri, what can the county, what can the state, what can the federal government do to help you and the smaller shops?
Well, I think one of the issues we wrestle with now is parking. You know, there's that old saying, you know, the parking problem, when you have a parking problem, it's easier to figure out where to put them than how to get them. Well, we got to figure out a place to put them. And the county has been very supportive of that. We're looking at the court parking lot. If you don't know, Patrick, we have a 6th District Court. And the county, we're talking to them about taking that over, and they've given us grant money, about almost $1.6 million, towards the design of a parking garage. And we also have some state money coming in into that. So I think you have to look at what your needs are, and there is grant money, and there is those type of things to help out. And in terms of the county, we're lucky because the 5th Precinct is located here in the village. And part of the original agreement back in 1960 when Suffolk PD came in is that they would always be in a village. So our police coverage, you know, unlike, you know, Southampton, you have your own police, Jess and I, and at the town of Southampton, Suffolk PD is here. And so that helps with control of what happens downtown. But I think that you need to look at what your needs are on the infrastructure side. And it really comes down to is Jesse from out in Southampton, you know, what he's wrestling with now, trying to get the funding together for a sewer. That's a $20 million project, $15 million project by the time you put everything in. So it really is. It's about funding for infrastructures, I think, is where you look for the county and the state and federal.
Mayor Warren, I'm going to put you on the spot if you don't mind. But it's the reason I asked this. is because I got an email right before the show, and I got it from a relative of mine who said, and he lives on Long Island, and he said, I heard the promo for the show that you're going to do today. And he goes, I just want you to know, this year I did 95% of all my shopping online. And he is a millennial. And Mayor Warren, you're a millennial. How'd you do your shopping this year?
Well, people are shopping online, of course. But as your prior guest spoke about, people want experiences. And so while a lot of people shop on Amazon for their basic needs, people still love to go into stores. But a lot of big brands, and again, I work in fashion in addition to being a mayor, a lot of brands are actually using storefronts now as showrooms. And so you go in and you kind of look at the product, and then you can still buy it online. One of my favorite companies, Warby Parker, for example, which actually has a store in East Hampton, essentially you go in, you look at the product, and then you order it online. There's an evolution of retail. And so while people are shopping online, there is still a very important need for brick-and-mortar locations. And then that goes hand-in-hand with the infrastructure that Mayor Pontieri was speaking about, because we need our restaurants, we need our theaters, we need our parks. And just to take a quick digression here, the county and state are helping us out potentially with grant money for a new park on Moses Lane, which is in Southampton, which one of our former trustees, Nancy McGann, had done a lot of work on. But that's part of the overall equation. And so, yes, in conclusion, while many people are shopping online, there is still a need for the experiences in our main street. And then, as I showed you an example with Warby Parker, people are still using these storefronts as showrooms for online business.
Alex, are you finding that in Connecticut, too?
You know, the interesting trend, which I think you had asked, what would retailers most appreciate? I think for a lot of them, obviously an existing retailer, their concept is out there. People are coming in. They're adjusting to the existing customer base. I think the problem is primarily for entrepreneurs. And so there's a risk in terms of leasing a storefront. And I think what we started to see a little bit more of in Fairfield County, the Sono Collection Mall is doing this Christmas. I know it's a mall format, but they've created a pop-up marketplace space for pop-up shops just to be there for the holiday season. And you're seeing more and more of that. It's happened in downtown Westport and some other locations where stores that have either been vacated by the previous tenants or just enterprising landlords are opening up spaces for, you know, retailers to come in and trial their concepts a little bit. And I think that's really valuable. And on one hand, it creates a vibrancy for that particular retail plaza or building. It's something new for people to come back. Maybe they've got a favorite store there, but it gives them another reason to come in. And then for the entrepreneurs themselves, it gives them a way to test out that concept and then refine it. And with the idea of opening up their own store. It's a handbag maker in Westport, which had great success early on selling in China. They've now opened a full-fledged store in Westport. But she did a lot of experimentation prior to getting that going. And I think that that's a opportunity that more retailers need is to physical space to test that concept before deciding to take on the risk of opening a full-time store.
Alex Soll is with us for the remainder of the program, business and retail reporter for Hearst Connecticut Media. And I want to thank Paul Pontieri Jr., who is the mayor of Patchogue Village. Mayor, thank you. I appreciate your time as always.
I appreciate it.
And the mayor of Southampton Village, Jesse Warren. Mayor Warren, thank you. And I hope you have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. If you would like to join in the conversation on today's program, drop us an email. We're at tfs@wshu.org. And on Facebook, you're going to find us at Full Story WSHU. And once again, because if you can't catch the full program today, you could always download it as a podcast. You could do that on Spotify, on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts, or on Google Play. We have a number of guests coming up for you in the next segment of the program. Sherry Cote is going to be joining us. The president of the Shoreline Chamber of Commerce, Phil Andrews, is the president of the Long Island African American Chamber of Commerce, and Joe Garcia will also be with us, the president of the Farmingdale Chamber of Commerce. They're all coming up in the next segment. I hope you stay with us. We'll take our last break. We'll be right back. into the last segment on The Full Story. I'm Ron Ropiak, and the conversation today is about holiday shopping. The other week, we talked about the big malls, the big box stores, and are you going there? Are you buying online? And Alex Sull, who's with us, and Alex and I had a great conversation the other weekend. It was like, well, what about the smaller shops, mom and pops, you know, the ones who make up Main Street, the ones that we rely on? How are they doing nowadays? So that's what we're talking about. And if you want to join in the conversation, drop us an email, tfs@wshu.org. Alex is with us for the remainder of the program, and we're going to bring in a few other guests now to join the conversation. Joe Garcia is with us. And Joe is the president of the Farmingdale Chamber of Commerce. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Phil Andrews is the president of the Long Island African American Chamber of Commerce. How are you, Phil? And we also have Sherry Cote, who's the president of the Shoreline Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Ron. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for coming on. You represent Brantford, I'm doing this from memory, Brantford, North Brantford, and Guilford?
Correct, yes.
Okay. How's shopping? How's shopping in the Shoreline Chamber of Commerce for the small guys?
So shopping is, I guess, the same as you've heard from your other guests. It's a trend, I think, across the nation. But for chamber members, I think that they benefit from the support of their chambers. We do a lot for our small businesses, particularly our retailers and our restaurants, including hosting events in their areas to bring people to their stores and things like that. So, you know, we do what we can to help. Unfortunately, not everyone survives. There has been some decline in our local merchants in the Brantford and the Guilford area, but some of them do thrive as well. So it's sort of a give and take.
So I like what you said there, and that's what Alex was mentioning a short time ago. It's the events. It's the experiences. It's not just going out and buying something. You have to do something to bring the people in nowadays, don't you?
Yeah, our small businesses really need to create a unique and vibrant atmospheres to bring the people in. You know, we have many shops that are very unique. You can't buy their products online at Amazon or other places. You know, we have artists who sell glass jewelry. You can't get that unless you go to these shops. So we definitely have, you know, something good to offer for people that are willing to come out and, you know, maybe struggle with parking if that's an issue. But shop in our small shops. And there's a culture as well. People do love to support locally. Sometimes they need a draw. They need a reason to do that.
Joe Garcia, it's one of the things we've been talking about during this program. It's that the merchants nowadays, and we've heard this from a few different people, the merchants simply have to evolve. They have to change with the times. They have to be a bit more creative, don't they?
Yeah, they definitely do. And they really need to create a what I call a rabid fan base where you have a built-in clientele that will be repeat customers and kind of become your marketers for you. And by being creative and finding ways to create that, the retailers have found a way to have a niche in the market.
Rabid fan base. I like that. It reminds me of diehard Jets fans.
Yes.
It's what you have to be nowadays to be a Jet fan. You have to be a rabid fan. Phil Andrews is with us, president of the Long Island African American Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Phil. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your chamber.
Well, we are the largest chamber of Commerce, African-American in New York State, and we also the 2019 Small Business Champion for 14 counties in downstate New York this year. So we're excited about what you're talking about, helping businesses, and we've got a lot of ideas and suggestions.
Well, give us the top two ideas that you have. What would be best for small businesses?
Well, one of the things is to really focus on the local community. I think being local is a strength. I'm a former local business owner with 10 stores, and every time they did national holidays, we saluted them too. We advertised Thanksgiving, Black Friday. Being on Google is very important. Really getting your platform on Google is so important, because when you go on the internet today, it's all about local. But a lot of businesses, half of the businesses in America, are not even listed on Google properly.
Sherry, Alex and I were talking during the break, and we were talking about the younger generation versus those a little bit older nowadays. And it's interesting to hear what Phil had to say, because so many, I think, of the younger generation simply do everything through Amazon, or they look it up through Google. But in the meantime, from what you were saying before, maybe that they just have to get a little bit older, and they have to learn that sometimes you have to go out to the shops, you have to do a little legwork to find some of the unusual products that you're not going to find online.
Absolutely, yes. And I do think that even the millennials are not all shopping online. I think that they do get out in their community and they do look for those special deals and those unique gift items. I've seen it. I have millennials, you know, my own children, and they're doing that. So, I think that there's something to be said there for getting them into the shops. I think that the local businesses, they really need to provide consistent and personalized outreach to their community. They need to, customer service is really important. Being on a first name basis with their neighborhood, with the public is very helpful, and it creates that loyal and personal connection for the retailers. I think that that's important as well.
Joe Garcia, what do you need from in terms of support from the county, from the state, from the federal government? What can be done that could help the smaller merchant?
Well, I think it comes down to compliance and regulation costs. The state, here in New York State, and then, we have many layers of government where we are in Farmingdale, from village, town, county, and then state. The costs and time, which is probably the biggest cost, the cost of time on the business owner to work their way through the regulatory and the compliance processes, it's become extremely difficult, and that's time we take away from building that rabid fan base, doing what we decided to do when we opened our businesses, and forces us to spend money that could have otherwise been spent on our business and on our employees. So when it comes to what we're looking for from our local and state government, it would be some help getting through the minutiae of all these regulatory rules that often are written with big business in mind, and yet it's small business that we have here in Farmingdale that's trying to navigate through it.
Alex, what Joe Garcia is saying reminds me of what Andy Markowski was talking about earlier in the program, and he was saying the regulations from the state of Connecticut, the mandates, can simply drive some owners batty, if you will, and just trying to comply with everything, it makes the situation, a difficult situation, even more difficult.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the municipality. A lot of those regulations are driven by the local municipalities, and some towns will have much more stringent rules in place than some of the cities will. And so it comes and goes. Whenever I think of kind of those kinds of challenges for a small business owner, I do always kind of come back to, well, in the end, though, the ultimate driver of your success is the appeal of your business. And so if all businesses are laboring under the same kind of pressure or onerous regulations, then you have to look at what are the success stories within that construct, and some are more successful than others. Whenever we're talking about kind of retailers and needing a unique spin, there is a great online proxy for that, which is Etsy, which is a website that a lot of people have used where you can buy artisan handmade crafts. And Etsy sales are in the billions of dollars now. And it's kind of an Amazon for the crowd who like to make stuff at home and sell it online. And so I think that that's a great example of how being unique, you can have success. It's an online proxy to what a lot of storefronts need to be doing themselves. And you can look all around Fairfield County and Long Island and Westchester and find very successful stores that have that are not duplicating what are sold at the big box stores. They're selling some of the same stuff, but they're doing it in their own unique way, and they're having success, and they do have that longevity. But it is making yourself unique and making yourself memorable, and like we've been saying, driving that rabid fan base to come back.
Phil Andrews, how about that buy local, shop local, buy local movement that's been going on the past few years? Is that still going strong on Long Island?
Oh, yes, it's going strong on Long Island, and I just wanted to chime in, too, of how important that is. We have about we have two major organizations on Long Island, Nassau Council Chambers of Commerce, about 60 to 80 chambers, and about 40. So what we're doing is sometimes we do 5-chamber event, 10-chamber event. And just last week I went on the radio and they said, well, let's bring your chamber to Islandia where it was impacted by Sandy. So if we work together, we have to work together because nobody wants to see vacant downtowns. So I think we're going to work. It's not just going to be one county chamber. It might be 5 county chambers working together to bring more traction. So the way we're working locally is different today.
Sherry, what Phil just said, it really strikes me because I think there's nothing sadder or that can make people take a look at their community in a different way when you go downtown or you go to Main Street and you see shops that are boarded up and it's vacant, and it gives you a feeling of like, what is going on in my community? Is that the case for you?
We're so lucky in our area. We don't have a lot of vacant properties in our downtown. I know parts of Connecticut do, and it is absolutely depressing. And I know that our economic development folks try to figure out ways to, you know, get businesses in there or even decorate those storefronts so that they don't look so depressing. But we're lucky in Guilford and Brantford and North Brantford. We don't really have that area. But I did want to chime in a little bit on the buying locally, especially because one of the top reasons to buy local for our shoppers is because those shop owners are paying their taxes. And when they pay their taxes, they're supporting the fire and the police in those towns that people live in. Not to mention, of course, paying their employees, which helps to support their families. But that's one of the top reasons for people to really try and buy local when they're out holiday shopping right now.
It is such an important reason. But Joe Garcia, how do you convince people how important that is when they're sitting there at home and the weather's bad like it is today and they're saying, well, I was going to go out and shop and I need to pick up X number of presents. But you know what? The computer's right here. I can just order it and I don't have to think twice about it.
Well, it is a challenge. And that's why you really want to have that rabid fan base. But I think what we try to do is remind people that it's not going to be, you know, Amazon or one of the other online retailers that's going to be open at 11 at night when you need the formula, the diapers, or a gallon of milk. It's going to be the place around the block. And if you want them to be there at, you know, 11 at night or 4 in the morning, you need to shop there other times too. And it's just the campaigns of the shop local and the buy local is a good way and a good excuse to go out there and remind people that it's important to shop local year-round. And if we lose a day or two because of weather, you know, that's okay if we're selling stuff the rest of the year.
Sherry, what can the state of Connecticut do to help you and help the retailers who belong to the Shoreline Chamber of Commerce?
Well, some of your other guests have talked about the challenges of being a business in the state of Connecticut with different mandates and things like that. So I think that the state should keep that in mind as they're thinking about future legislation. And then also supporting local initiatives. And I know that they do that. And working with chambers of commerce, that's why we're here. Our chamber created a Small Business Saturday toolkit so that we could hand it out to not just our chamber members, but non-members, in an effort to help them prepare their business for Small Business Saturday. Now, of course, that's an American Express initiative that happens once a year, and we have our own local first initiative that we promote every day of the year. But anything that any of us can do to support our small retailers and keep them there and not going out of business is really important because, you know, as you've talked about with malls and things like that, we can't lose them. We really need them to be here, and they need our support more now than ever.
Phil Andrews, are you worried about the future or are you confident?
I'm confident. In Long Island, we've done several pop-up and shop where we're designated 5 or 6 organizations, and we went to those businesses in a day. I think what gets marketed and get done, we have to make shopping downtown important.
Alex, we've got about two and a half minutes left, and I just want to go back to what you and I were talking about in terms of these pop-up shops. It just seems that things are evolving quickly, if you will, and people are being creative and they're being innovative, which is optimistic.
Yeah, and the evolution the great unknown is Amazon, isn't it? And so they went out and bought Whole Foods a couple of years ago. Nobody saw that coming. And so they established this massive retail presence in many of the towns in our area. And we don't know what they're about to do for delivery. We say, well, you need a store to go out and get your milk at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. We don't know that you'll need that in 10 years. That could very well be handled by this amazing, huge company that is innovating, out-innovating everybody. And so it does pull me back to what kind of community do people want to live in? And I do know that, say, in downtown Norwalk, where Washington Street has so many restaurants, everyone recognizes that's not quite the way to set up a really bustling street, that you want to mix. And yet, the retailers don't come into there. Every time a restaurant goes away, another restaurant comes into its place. So a lot of these problems, like, people know what a vibrant retail street should feel like when they go onto Greenwich Avenue and there's a mix of chains and locals and restaurants and stores and service providers. Everyone kind of knows what it should look like. And the question is, it's a free market. And so are entrepreneurs coming up with really attractive ideas that'll bring people in? And can they rents and everything else in that area, can they support those ideas until they can get it up and going? And it's trying to predict the future 2 years out is just so impossible because of the internet and Amazon.
Phil Andrews, 20 seconds, please, for final thoughts.
Yes, one final thought. On Long Island, they're now lobbying for online businesses to pay taxes because the other lady mentioned a few minutes ago about taxes. Well, that should be a way to support online neighborhoods too.
Sherry Cote, also 20 seconds for final thoughts, please.
Sure. So I just would hammer home the point of trying to support our local businesses. They are active members of our community. They get involved in our events. They're active with your local sports teams. And so they deserve to have our support as well.
And finally, Joe Garcia for final thoughts, please.
Yeah, just that it's important to have a local economy. It's important to have local business and places to shop and eat and drink. And as we look forward to the future, yep, Amazon and the internet are changing everything. But we know that if we stick with our plan, we'll have shop local important too.
Joe Garcia, the president of the Farmingdale Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Phil Andrews, president of the Long Island African-American Chamber of Commerce. Phil, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And Sherry Cote, the president of the Shoreline Chamber of Commerce. Sherry, happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays, Ron. Thank you.
Thank you. And Alex Sull, the business and retail reporter for Hearst Connecticut Media. Alex, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming in. It's going to do it for our show today. Sabrina Garone's the engineer. Carrie Frank's the digital editor. Our associate producers, Fatou Sangari, who's the line producer today, Sabrina Garone, Roberta Rojas, J.D. Allen is the producer, and Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to everyone for being part of The Full Story.